First of all, my name is Professor Amin Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, former city councilman for the city of Compton, former Compton College Board of Trustees, and former Compton Unified School District trustee. We want to welcome you and all the guests to the Conscious Corner. The Conscious Corner is an educational platform that has been provided by the Community Education Network. Every Tuesday and Wednesday, we're on from 6 to 7. We try to provide the people opportunity to learn and find out what's going on within the community and also in the world. As we're taught, we are worldly people, and what happens in the world affects us. Right. And even sometimes people blame us for things happening in the world from far, far away. So elections are very important, and the structure. We ask you to come on so that give people opportunity to find out what's going on with the district attorney's office, how it works, what are some of the key points you would like to tell people, and at the same time, provide you a platform to discuss your challenges in this upcoming election. Being a progressive, as you are, as they call you, the progressive, being a person, well, for everyone here, a district attorney, Cascon, came from Cuba. He immigrated from Cuba along with his mother and father. He went to Bell High School. He went to Long Beach State College. He got his attorney's education at Western Law School, and he was appointed by Newsom to take over for Kamala Harris when she went to the California Attorney General's office. He's very progressive from the standpoint of dealing with changing the bail structure in his office, whereas many people were in jail and they couldn't get out because they didn't have the money for little minor things. The severe people got bail, but people that may have been there for warrants or tickets or child support or something like that, and they couldn't get out because they didn't have the money. And all it was a cash cow for agencies to make money and contracts and things of that nature. But anyway, we're going to give District Attorney Cascon an opportunity to explain himself and explain the coalition that seemed to have abandoned him, that got him in office. In my opinion, he replaced Jackie Lacey, Black Lives Matter, and a coalition of progressive. Urshid got him in as district attorney, and he kept his commitments, but, whatever. I'll let him explain what's going on. Attorney Cascon. And if you have questions, you can also put them in the chat. And Rashiki Mascani, again, because we're going to go around and give people an opportunity to ask questions. But if we don't get to you, put it in the chat and we'll make sure District Attorney Cascon, along with his assistant, Shaylin Joseph, that's here. That's also pretty sure she's going to be taking notes. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, Professor Rod, again, I apologize to you and everybody else in the audience for being late. And I want to thank you. It's an honor for me to share a space with you all today. And it's wonderful to know that you were a professor at Cal State Long Beach. I wish if I would have been one of your students, but I think I was probably there much earlier than when you were a professor. But let me just, I'm glad that you teed it off the way you did, because I was elected on a platform that was very community-based, and it was very straightforward. I never deviated from the things that we promised we were going to do. We talked about the fact that we would hold people accountable, but that included holding law enforcement accountable. We talked about not seeking the death penalty. We talked about not putting kids into adult prison. We talked about reducing the use of enhancements that are overused generally to lock up and over-incarcerate Black and brown communities. We talked about also dealing with issues of poverty in a very different way, not criminalizing people because they're poor, not sending people to jail for a day or two just simply because they're unable to afford the rent. And when I was sworn in, I view all those promises that we made as a contract with you all. And we immediately roll out a series of policy directives that were embedded into our practice to ensure that we were going to do the things that we promised the community that we were going to do. And from the day, you know, from the very beginning, we got a tremendous amount of pushback. You know, there were two recalls, over $10 million for spending recalls against me, all, you know, driven by police and very right-wing money. And then, you know, we got into the re-election process and the same thing occurred. And now we're seeing, you know, over $10 million coming from real estate developers, very affluent people, and police, and again, trying to shut down our movement. But, you know, the movement that we started, and you notice I very seldom use the word I, because I could never do any of this without the support of so many. I'm glad that you mentioned the coalition that we have with BLM, labor, churches, community-based organizations, Democrats. And, you know, much of that is still in place. Part of what we may not have now is, you know, the some people that, you know, were very affluent that put a lot of money in some of these races after the George Floyd event. And they've, you know, they've decided to invest elsewhere, and we understand that. But our community-based support has been solid. We have almost every Democratic club in the county that, you know, any club that is in the race has endorsed me, and it's almost all of them. We have the party, we got the Labor Federation, the County Labor Federation, but we have many of the unions they have. We got a lot of community-based organizations. I also have a lot of elected leaders, like, and I'm, given that this is primarily an African-American audience, I'm going to concentrate on that, but we're represented across the board. But, you know, people like Holly Mitchell, Sidney Kamlager, Tina McKinnor, Stephen Bradford, just to mention a few, Isaac Bryan, and I can go on and on and on. You know, Black organizations have endorsed me, and they're working hard to make sure that we get elected because they believe that what we're doing is critically important to every community, but I think it's even more important often to the Black and Brown communities that are the ones that often get treated with disrespect and are often the victims of over-incarceration and system abuse. And people get that. And that's why our coalition continues to grow almost on a daily basis. But let me tell you what we have done in addition to that. We dealt with the traditional crime. We prosecuted over 100,000 violent felonies and serious crimes. That's on par with the average prosecution rate for the last 10 years. We have gone after organized retail theft by targeting people that are doing this in an organized manner. And 92% of the cases the police brought in front of us were prosecuting them. We have gone after people that are breaking into people's homes and burglarizing them. And over 80% of those cases, again, when the police makes an arrest, we're filing those cases. It's important to know, by the way, that's not the average, because generally prosecutors maybe file 60, 50% of the cases presented by the police. So these are very high rates because we understand the impact on our community. And for the people that are causing serious crimes, they're doing serious time. But here's the other things that we're doing that my predecessor never did. We have now prosecuted over 150 police officers for things like excessive force, shootings, lying on the stand. We have also started a wage, a labor justice unit going after wage theft. The biggest theft crime in our county is unscrupulous employers stealing from our workers, which are mostly Black and Brown and immigrants. Over $1 billion are stolen from workers every year. We've now represented cases involving 350 victims, and you know, and have been able to return millions of dollars back of unpaid salaries. We have also gone and done environmental work that was never done before, because one of the things that I'm very concerned is about environmental justice. We know that especially Black and Brown communities are often not only penalized by bad public health, bad education, and bad systems and policing, but also we have tremendous amount of pollution that impacts our communities, and there's generally no accountability. And I'll give you one example of 250 cases we've handled. One of the larger cases involves Atlas Metal, right next to Jordan Downs in the Watts area. This is a metal recycler that has been polluting the soil and the water right next to a high school, Jordan High, and next to a housing development, Jordan Downs. The EPA several years ago measured the contents of lead in the soil on the football field and says it was 75 times more than what is safe for human exposure. Two prior administrations, the Cooley and the Jackie Lacey administration, were presented with cases and they refused to handle those cases. And not only did we go after them, but we went after criminally after the owners. Let me tell you what the impact of that is. If you get a serious exposure to lead and it gets into your skeletal system, that lead will carry on for three generations. It will go to your kids and it will go to your grandkids, assuming that they're not having their own personal exposure. Now, we know that lead impacts our learning ability, it impacts brain development, and you know, often, quite frankly, it impacts other behavioral problems. We've known this for decades, and yet we continue to allow a company like that to pollute our community without any consequences. We've gone after them. We have also gone after consumer cases, like cases where people like Bunns and Albertsons that were basically advertising products, and then after the advertised price, after the sale ended, they jack up the price but kept the shelves with the same price, so that when our people go to a checkout, they're overpaying. They're thinking they're paying what is posted on the shelf when they're paying more. We are also ensuring that the people that were wrongfully convicted are getting a second opportunity. We have now exonerated 14, and today we announce our intent to exonerate two more. We have resentenced over 300 men and women that have been the victims of over-incarceration for years. And by the way, out of all those, only four have reoffended. Shalon Joseph, who's here with us, has been the primary engineer in taking 36 or 37 people out of death row. Again, those were all people of color. I can go on and on. Crime, it's down in the city of LA. Now, I understand that there are parts of the county where we have increases, and you hear the crime is up in the county, and it's complex because we have 88 cities, and in some cities, like the city of LA, have experienced reductions in crime for the last 2 years. Pasadena has experienced reductions. Long Beach, on the other hand, has had an increase, but it's not across the board. And we know that crime has gone up in our neighboring communities, where you have prosecutors that take a very different view of the work. So we know that what we're doing is not only not causing crime to go up, but we're addressing things that have been left unattended for generations. And the only reason why they're being left unattended is because it impacts poor Black and Brown folks. Otherwise, I guarantee you that if Jordan High School was located in Beverly Hills, this would have been dealt with 20 years ago. But the kids that were getting exposed to lead were Black and Brown kids. So, you know, for some people, that didn't matter. That's the kind of work that we're doing. And that's why important that we continue to do this work in the 4 years to come. And that's why I'm so dedicated to doing this work.
Good. And thank you for that commentary. I just going to ask what, you know, and we appreciate the work you've done in many ways. Many people appreciate your position on the death penalty and not charging kids with various crimes, not the major ones, but as adults, and they have to go through a process to be reclassified as an adult. We appreciate that. But also, there are some issues that the people seem to blame your office for, or lump you in with other agencies, such as the unhoused and the various increase of crime among the unhoused, stabbing, shootings at the metro station. Second, they're upset about the aspect of street takeovers, and they blame, they look at the criminal justice system as one, police, enforcement, prosecution, and, some type of a result of that prosecution. And I heard on your debate with the person running against you, you said that, it's a police job to arrest. Right. But it seems as if they were saying you were soft on crime. And but it's the police job. Some people think that the police, who have not endorsed you and working with White Ring to get you out, are slowing down on arrest and slowing down on response. I don't know how that's going, how you respond to that.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm so glad, Professor, that first of all, you mentioned the fact that, the prosecutors don't make arrests, right? We can only act upon when an arrest is made by the police, and assuming that the arrest was lawful, then we can prosecute it. And by the way, while there is no question that there may be some officers that are blaming me personally for things that I have nothing to do with, there are many others that are doing their work day in and day out, working really hard. And, the reason why crime is down in communities like LA is because at the end of the day, communities are working together with the police, and there are many other things that are happening in order to lower crime. Crime went up during the pandemic across our nation, and crime has started to go down across our nation. And you take homicides, for instance, where, again, a historic lows. So it's nuanced in the sense that, in many instances, there are some people that are blaming me, but when you really dig a little deeper inside, you're seeing that the work is being done in spite of the political opposition. And then the other component is, and I, it's complicated, and a lot of people don't understand this, but, out of the 10 million plus people that we have in our county, about a half of the county population has their own city attorney, which means that prosecuting misdemeanor crimes, like a street takeover, for instance, unless there are injuries, unless there is some other felonious conduct, that will go to the city attorney's office. So, for instance, if you live in the city of LA, shoplifting cases, simple assaults in the metro, people in possession of drugs for personal use, some of the lower level crimes that are associated with the unhoused, we never see those crimes because they go to the city attorney's office. And the city attorney, of course, is responsible for the 4 million people or so in the city of LA. But it's the same thing if you live in Santa Monica, Long Beach, Pasadena, Burbank, Torrance. They all have their own city attorneys. So a lot of the misdemeanor prosecutions around the county are not, are not the work that we do. Felonies, I handle the entire county, and we're very aggressive in dealing, especially with crimes of violence. And that's why I said our prosecution rates are equal to the last 10-year average.
How do you feel about qualified immunity for police and judges and district attorneys and public defenders who put some of these people in jail that you're helping get out, that ignored evidence, hid evidence, lost evidence?
Yeah.
And, because how do you feel about qualified immunity? Because people criticize that. That's yeah. A big thing, especially with police.
Yeah, I mean, look, so let me first of all, I know it's confusing, but qualified immunity is actually a legal, it's a civil doctrine, and it really doesn't impact the criminal practice, right? So we practice criminal law, we prosecute crimes criminally. Qualified immunity is when you're suing a police officer or a police department for conduct that causes harm, and you're seeking a civil resolution. You're suing for money or for injunctive relief or a combination of both. The courts have to look and see whether the behavior that is being alleged is consistent with the pattern of practice of policing in general. And if other people have, conducted business accordingly, and it's been okay in the past, then they get qualified immunity. They have to step outside of that pattern and practice in order to have civil liability, but it doesn't really come into play in the criminal practice. So, you know, when we're prosecuting police officers, for instance, they don't get qualified immunity, but they do get laws that frankly are very forgiving when it comes to police behavior. So when a police officer uses excessive force, for instance, you know, the courts are always going to look at whether the police officer had a reasonable belief that his or her life was in danger or other people's life were in danger. And so our job is to, if we're prosecuting one of those cases, we have to show that, you know, it was unreasonable for the police to use the level of force that they used in order to handle a situation. So while qualified immunity doesn't impact our criminal practice, there are criminal laws that still provide a very large level of discretion to the police. Now, there are some good public policy reasons why we want police to be able to use deadly force or force in order to protect all of us and protect themselves. You know, police are the only ones that are generally going to go and face extremely dangerous people that may be armed, that may be causing harm. And in order to get the job done, they have to use force. The question becomes when that force is excessive and it goes beyond what the law allows. And that's where we come in. And frankly, that's often where cultural problems come in, right? We have a lot of judges and we have, frankly, even people in the community, juries, that even when the officer clearly violated the law, they are unwilling to find criminal liability because they want to give the officer sort of the benefit of the doubt that they were acting under a great deal of stress and that they, even if they violated the law, that maybe it's understandable because of the stress of the moment. And that is where the challenge for us is. But to wrap it up, you know, understanding the qualified immunity is a civil doctrine. I personally believe that qualified immunity needs to be reformed. I think it's a problem that often allows bad public officials and certainly police officers sometimes to escape criminal, to escape civil liability and civil responsibility for their bad behavior.
But sometimes prosecutors have bad behavior and you can't sue them.
100%. 100%. And, you know, we try to hold them accountable too. I would say, look, I mean, today we have two exonerations that clearly point to questionable behavior by prosecutor in the case. So, you know, we take that into account. It gets a little more complex because prosecutor's immunity is much more limited than that, for instance, for police. But also they have a lot of discretion in how they charge cases, how they present evidence. So it gets very nuanced and very complicated. But believe me, we deal with the outcome of sometimes bad prosecution, and we're trying prospectively to eliminate a lot of that by creating the practice that we have. You know, we're also, I was a strong supporter actually of the Racial Justice Act, for instance, which has both a retroactive and a prospective look. We've created the first and only racial justice unit in the state, where we're looking using current law to actually examine incidents where there was evidence of racial animus, either by prosecutors, police, a judge, jurors, or witnesses, so that we can offer people redress and relief when they were perhaps convicted of a crime where racial bias was a component of that conviction.
Okay. What about selective prosecution? Explain what that means, because a lot of people feel that sometimes public officials, and even people in the DA office, they cover for each other. And then selective prosecution, the DA filed charges.
Yep.
Right. A judge can refer charges and the DA can refuse it. I mean, because the DA is the one that's got the prosecutor. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, the DA makes, the prosecutor makes the final decision of whether to file the case or not. And there is no question that there is so much discretion for prosecutors that it's very easy for prosecutors to exceed their authority, not necessarily legally, because they have the discretion to file a case, but how they use that discretion. So one of the challenges for us in the office has been, and the reason why we created so many of the policies that we have, is actually to ensure that we address incidents where discretion is being used for the wrong reasons, right? So I think when you know you hear the as you mentioned the term selective prosecution, you know, prosecutors are selective in their prosecutions all the time. It's inherent in the system that we use discretion to file the cases. So the challenge for me and our team is to make sure that we use that discretion in a way that is not only fair and equitable, but it is appropriate. That, you know, we just simply don't prosecute a case because we can, but that we prosecute a case because we should, which is a big difference. You know, police can make a lot of arrests. The evidence may be there to prove the case, but the question often becomes for us, even though the arrest was legal, even though the law was violated, should we continue forward with the prosecution? And if we do, what do? Do we seek diversion? Do we seek, you know, maybe some kind of out of custody remedy, or do we seek custody time? And those are all part of the discretion that prosecutors have. Of course, the judges are the ones that make the ultimate decision in terms of what sentence is going to be handled, but there's no question the prosecutors are the ones that start the ball rolling. And that's why it's so important to have prosecutors that work with guidelines and policies that very clearly create protective fences, if you will, to try to reduce the impact of bias in our work.
A good question. And then I would get to the rest of the people to ask questions. One is that, is there a statute of limitation for prosecutors or public defendants who use perjury for convictions or they perjured themselves, or they lose evidence and there's no follow-up in murder cases? And then when the Menendez brothers, which y'all are considering, revisiting their case and considering that they've done enough time for two murders, that was convicted by a 12-person jury. One of the hardest things for regular people to do is to win an appeal or even get a revisitation of their case, no matter how much evidence, when there's 12 people that convicted you at that time. And then 30 years later, or 20 years later, without an appeal, from my understanding, the Menendez brothers is getting a relook. And it's not like they won an appeal. It's just a district attorney position based on letters and family letters that you're going to look at their case when there's millions of people who would wish you would look at their case. But I know you don't have the people power, but how does that come about? And that's why people think it's a bias for the rich. You know, yeah. This time.
So, you know, I started a resentencing unit when I first became the DA, and we have resentenced over 300 people, and most of them are poor Black and brown people. 28 of them were resentenced for murder. They were in for murder. So actually, the Menendez case, which, by the way, has been in our office now for about a little over a year, because we do very intensive work in order to come to a final conclusion, are really part of over 300 cases. Now, what it is true is that most of the resentencing that we do never garners any media attention. You know, when a Black person from, you know, was given 50 years to life 30 years ago and we resentenced them, very few people care. We care. We obviously did the work to give them a new opportunity, because they rehabilitated themselves and they earned the right to come back to our society. we also have done exonerations, and you know, again, our exonerations are all so far have all been poor people of color, all in black and brown. And again, you know, there's not a lot of attention, but we do the work. So yes, it is true that Menendez are famous, and they have become more famous because their trial initially was so salacious. And I haven't made a decision yet, but I will by the end of this week. But there's actually two legal processes that are at play here that apply to anybody. One is what is called a habeas. And under habeas, which is what the Menendez brothers' lawyers are alleging, there was evidence that should have been presented in front of a jury that was not presented. And before the lack of candor, if you will, a jury convicted. And that evidence, according to their defense lawyers, had to do with the fact that they have been subjects of sexual molestation for many years and emotional abuse. And initially they were tried separately. So there were two trials, one for each of them. And a lot of that evidence came in and the jury could not make a decision. And the office actually tried to get the death penalty. That those cases, the jury could not come to a conclusion. So then the office refiled the case, brought a new case over, put them both together in the same trial. And then a lot of the evidence that had been presented on the first case where a jury could not come to a conclusion, they were able to get it excluded. And then the jury in the second case was not exposed to some of the all the information about molestation. They got some, but not all of it. And they convicted them. So what the their lawyers are saying, you know, if all this information would have come in, a jury may have decided differently. So that's one avenue. The other avenue is what we do resentencing, which is when people come to us and say, you know, this person committed the crime, but they've been in prison for a long time and they have shown evidence of rehabilitation and they have shown that they can come back into the community and not be harmful to anyone. And of those, we have now resentenced over 300 people. And by the way, over 300 people, only four have reoffended. So it means that we're doing our job and really examining closely the people that we resentence. The case of the Menendez, we have two vehicles, two avenues. One is the habeas. The other one's a resentencing. The habeas petition was filed over a year ago. Frankly, nobody was paying attention to it. And the resentencing was filed, was a request earlier this year. What has occurred is this case has already come back again into people's attention because of a new documentary. Now, there have been documentaries in the past about him, by the way, but this new documentary sort of captured people's imagination. But before that occurred, we already had a court date on the habeas for late November. And we have been bombarded with media requests. And we decided that we would publicly say that we're looking at the case and that I'm going to make a decision. But frankly, this is other than the public interest in this case and the salaciousness of the murder. This is just one of over 300. Well, there are two because it's two brothers, just two of over 300 people that we have looked for resentencing. And we will continue to do that because we don't base our resentencing practices on whether you're famous or not.
I agree with that, but it's a murder. I mean, two people were killed, and they would tell most black people or people of color, harmless error, or they would say they were of age that they could have called the police, or like that young lady that was a part of those kids that were being abused in Riverside. She jumped out the window and told people that they had an opportunity to if they were sexually abused, even though they used that defense in their original trial. But I don't want to get into that one that long. You answered what I want to. I'm going to go to the other people, but there's so much to
that. I just remember that we have resentenced 28 murderers that were all black and brown.
Yeah.
We have resentenced over 300 people and they're all black and brown. So,
yeah,
let's
see,
put that into the context of what we've done.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And I'm sure the people that you exonerated appreciate
You're exonerated also,
yeah,
black and
yeah,
brown
but,
people.
but there's a lot of people incarcerated don't have the attorneys, you
Right.
know, the public defender, and they don't have the private people to file those petitions, which costs, you're talking $500 an hour attorneys or more. And it's a different game. And that's why the people, but you know that.
No, I do. But I mean, I have to tell you, actually, that the people that we have resentenced are all poor people. The attorneys representing them do this without any pay. In fact, even on the case of exonerations today, one of the lawyers hasn't gotten paid a penny and doesn't expect to. So I think it's important for a community to understand there is no question that people that have money and wealth get access to things that other people don't. But I have to tell you that the people that were resentencing, the people who were exonerating, they didn't have any money. They're all poor people. And we did the work because a lot of good people came together to make sure that this was done.
All right. Brother Rasha Key, are you there?
Yes.
You have any questions?
No, not at this time. I want to make sure other people get a chance to ask.
All right. All right. Brother Ahi from Detroit, do you have any questions?
Yes, just one quick question. Mr. Gascon touched on qualified immunity, and that's one of the things that was kind of, it's kind of troubling that by since the year 2000, 1018, people have been murdered by the cops. And 80% of those are the Black and Latinos. Now, this is according to the LA Times. And the number of homicides or murders that occur monthly are like four people. This is the average. It's roughly 42 people per year. And this has been pretty steady over the last 24 years. 92% of them are shot, 80% are Black and Latino. What are the numbers today under your administration?
The number of people, the police officer we prosecuted, over 150.
Well,
by comparison, well, but
well, we know. Excuse me, just before you get to that point, the only two cops have been charged for the killing of any civilians over the last 24 years. So I'm asking you, what are your numbers of the number of citizens that have been that are murdered monthly? And a rough estimate of what how many per year under your administration?
Well, look, I mean, first of all, the term murder implies an unlawful killing. Most of the killings that occur when the police use force are not unlawful. Okay. So
okay, well, how many homicides?
I don't have that number. We can get it for you. I do not have the number of homicides at the hands of a police officer. The number of murders that come to our attention, when we believe it's a murder, we prosecute those cases. We have a very high bar to establish that a police officer engaging in unlawful killing, which is a murder. When police officers confront people that have weapons of any kind, and they can show reasonably that they were under the fear of being harmed themselves or someone else, the law is very clear that that will become a lawful killing.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I just want to add in, because I know the DA was trying to get this point, is that, and I've been in this system here for 29 years now.
Introduce yourself and tell
okay,
me.
I'm sorry. I'm Shalon Joseph. I'm special counsel to DA Gascon. I was a public defender for 25 years in LA County. I've been with the DA for almost 4 years now. But I do think it's important to understand that under this administration, the DA has prosecuted the most police officers than we've seen over the past two administrations. So in terms of police accountability, under this administration, we are prosecuting those cases. So I think it's important to make that distinction as well.
Okay.
And most of these homicides are still taking place concentrated in the cities of Long Beach and Compton.
Those numbers I'll have to get to you. In terms of how many, the number of prosecutions that we're doing against police officers, we have by far outnumbered the prior two administrations. But I can get you the actual data.
Yeah, because they hadn't prosecuted any of them. That's one of the reasons.
Correct.
Under Cooley and under Jackie Lacey, that's one of their biggest criticisms. But Mr. Maddox, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you very much, District Attorney.
Introduce yourself.
My name is James Maddox. I am a member of the Association of Black Social Workers of Greater Los Angeles, and I am a social worker focused on policy and an analyst. I have two questions. It's a two-part question. What happened to the coalition that supported you when you first ran 4 years ago? And then the second question is, or really a suggestion, you listed some of the Black support that you've been receiving, and I recognize that I'm an I'm in a throwback. I read the newspaper. I don't even see them. Why aren't they out in front talking about supporting you to get reelected? Anyway.
Yeah, no, good. Both of them are good questions, Mr. Maddox. First of all, let me say the community coalition, right, that we had in 2020 not only is there, but has grown, right? People involving LA Voices, Baptist ministers, I just met with them yesterday, overwhelmingly supporting. I have more labor support today than I did in 2020. I have more Democratic Club support than we did in 2020. People like Holly Mitchell, for instance, we were joined in the Taste of Soul this weekend, Saturday, at the stage where she introduced me. She introduced me at our rally where we kicked off our campaign. There are out there. The problem is, the media may not necessarily cover that stuff, right? The media will cover the, my opponent, first of all, is buying a lot of TV time, which is paid, by the way, by police unions. We don't have that, right? So our media coverage is more, is more what we call organic, right? But I can tell you that the people that are supporting us are out there. We're getting people that are phone banking. We're getting hundreds of people that are phone banking for us. We got, labor organizations that are doing a lot of contacts. If you see, there's a lot of slates out there that are being put together by the clubs and by organizations that are getting to their particular niche people that are supportive of me. In fact, I just got one from a group in the San Gabriel Valley that I was not even familiar with them. And they sent me a copy where they send it to several thousand people. So the People Coalition, labor and organizations, LA Voices, they're subtly behind us. What is not there today that it was there in 2020 was there were some, outside expenditures where people put, millions of dollars both for and against me. And you're seeing now that money is really mostly against me, and it's all driven by police unions and by, real estate developers, including a gentleman that ran against Karen Bass and put $110 million of his own money. And now he's, again, putting money against me. So it's important to distinguish the two, because the people power that we had in 2020 continues to be there. At the same rate, we have actually our personal fundraiser, the fundraising is comparable to 2020. We have now raised about $1 million, which is what we raised in 2020. All the other money that you saw advertising and all that in 2020, that came from outside independent expenditures, which we don't control. You're seeing a lot of that supporting my opponent, but those were the same people that were against me in 2020. It's police unions, Republican interests, real estate developers. So the difference is, you're not seeing the level of money independently spent on my behalf, but the people, the community, I can tell you that that is actually grown from where we were in 2020.
But you were chief of police in Mesa County, Mesa City, and you were assistant police chief for LA. You were a police, you know, I mean, you worked in law enforcement.
Yep.
And that's why I guess some Maddox asked that. I mean, why, what, you made a lot of enemies?
Well, listen, they were against me in 2020. They were against me in San Francisco. But the reason why they are, and Shalon spoke to this, right? I'm prosecuting police officers that engage in bad behavior. I'm ensuring that the prosecutors are forced to provide discovery to the defense when officers are coming to provide testimony that have a history of racism or excessive force or other crimes. None of that occurred before at any serious level. So the fact that I'm doing that has made police unions very unhappy with me. And that's why they're campaigning so hard. We have reduced the number of people going to prisons and the number of years they go to prison. That makes prison guards unhappy too. And people that supply, and people that supply to the prisons and the jails. So, you know, there's a lot there to unpack that makes this very unhappy people. And that's why they're putting so much money against me. I'm very pro law enforcement. I'm very pro good policing. I am a police officer at heart, but I believe in good policing, respectful policing, not racist policing, not mass incarcerating policing, not over policing communities of color. And that's where we sometimes come to a different place. And that's why policing unions are so opposed to me.
Yeah, but you know, very few people know that you are an immigrant. Very few people know that you came from Cuba. Very few people know that you've been very progressive. You were once with the Republican, now you're Democrat. And that, you know, I mean, let me give an example. We all know that there have been gangs in police departments for years. It has become noticed now. But when you do prosecute a police officer, it don't get the press. And so people don't know what you're doing. It's what Ms. Joseph was saying, that, you know, you're prosecuting police, but the public don't know it for some reason. And whoever's, I mean, you know, that's the issue. All these gangs, goon squads, donut rally, and police getting together talking about who they beat up and all that violence. You're not getting credit for it. And you know,
Professor, sometimes life is not fair, but we're here to do the right thing, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, but that's what struggle is about. We're taught you have to struggle. And I see that. But anyway, Brother Mashinda, you have a question?
I'm sorry, Professor Ra, the DA has about 2 minutes, and then he's going to have to log off. So I just wanted to give you a time. I'm so sorry about that.
No, you got to cut. Did all these people disappear?
I know. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
We were given 6 to 7. And I know he was late, so I've let him go a little bit longer, but he does have something right after this.
And we can get back together on later. Yes. Wait,
Ms. Joseph, could you stay on after he
leaves? Yes, I will.
I need to get a contact number.
I can leave my information in the chat, and you guys can reach out to me, and we can try to schedule another time.
I got
time.
Some serious issues that we want to bring to you about the district attorney office.
Okay. I will definitely put my information in the chat right now to you and make sure you have it.
Let me get Mashinda. Just two more quick questions. Sure. Mashinda.
Yes, I just want to let the attorney Gascon know that I truly appreciate your candor. My experiences working in San Diego County and LA County probation departments, I've met, you know, attorneys and prosecutors and things like that. I won't go, I know we have shorter time, but, you know, it's a breath of fresh air to hear your response. I'm in Louisiana right now. We have an attorney general governor named Jeff Landry, who is way over the top. He's actually eliminated parole and good time from inmates and things like that. And to hear what you're talking about, these gang enhancements that has been reduced and eliminated, you know, because a lot of our children, they do participate in gangs, but they're not hardcore. They're different levels of people. Yeah, the ones that's doing a bunch of killings and murderers, I understand that. But, you know, to add enhancements just because you're a gang member, you know, I worked in gang units and things like that. I'll leave it at that. And, you know, I'll continue to research your work. And but I just want to say that I appreciate what you have to offer. And although I'm in Louisiana, I know a lot of people in L.A. County. I was born and raised in the city of Compton. I still own property in Compton. Hey, man, good luck.
Thank you.
All right. And, okay. Saber Chimbuku, are you there? If she, okay. Do you have any questions?
I'm here, Professor Ra.
Saber Chimbuku Timbo, Vice President Saber Chimbuku, tell me all your credentials and then ask your question.
Yes, thank you so much, Professor Ra. I am Associate Director of the African American Cultural Center. Our executive director is Dr. Maulana Karenga. I'm also vice chair of the Black Chimbuko. Community Clergy and Labor Alliance. And again, my name is Chimbuko Tembo. And my question for you, Mr. Gascon, is regarding police associations. Many people argue that one of the problems with holding police officers accountable for their bad actions is because of these police associations that are really not unions. And don't function the way other unions function. I wonder if you could speak to that.
Yeah, you know, Ms. Tembo, you're absolutely right. And that's why I refuse to take any contributions from police organizations. I have for many years, by the way, for over a decade, because I believe that first it was a conflict of interest, but secondly, I believe that sometimes they inhibit the application of the law, especially when it comes to civil rights. And I believe that, frankly, I was a sponsor to a bill that failed 2 years ago, 3 years ago now. We tried to pass a bill, actually, that said that prosecutors cannot take money from police unions, and that if you did, you have to conflict yourself out of any cases involving their members. Unfortunately, they put a lot of money against that, and they were able to get the legislature to kill it. So I couldn't agree with you more. I think that one of the biggest problems and frankly concerning police accountability is the way that police unions are able to buy themselves into political races, how they buy city council races and others, and they create a situation where sometimes there's a lot of impunity that goes unchecked.
Okay, That's excellent.
And I apologize, but I do have another.
Okay. All right.
I put my, go ahead, DA. I'll stay on for a few more minutes, and I did put my information in the chat. So
again, we want to thank you. Many thanks. And we hope that, wish you the best in your election.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Professor Rum. And I look forward, actually, probably after the election, let's come back again and let's talk. I want to keep the dialogue going.
We're taught by Dr. Maulana Karenga. We vote for
thank you
issues, and we vote for better conditions. We don't vote for people. And most of the people like your progressiveness.
Thank
and
you.
We support you. All right.
Thank you. You take care now. Good
okay.
night.
All right.
Professor Rob,
yeah,
we could actually keep going a little bit more if you want, like post.
Yeah, I understand.
I can get log off so you guys can talk. I did put my email and phone number in the chat. To you, Professor Ra, if you want me to send it to anybody else, let me know. But
you
can
send
also...
it. You can send it to me, Roski Mascani, please.
Okay. Do you want me to put it in the chat here, or do you want me to email it to you?
You have my email. You can email.
Okay, I'll put it in the email, and then you'll know how to get. Or you can just give my email. I've been CC'd on all the emails. You could give it to Professor Ra.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Good. Either thanks way. A lot, Sheree.
Okay. It was very nice to meet you all. Thank you for having us.
Okay. All right, thank you for coming. Brother Lionel Henson, you there? Lionel? I mean, Brother Ijao. You're on mute, we can't hear you. All right. What about Tanai, you have a question? She left. What about Sanifu, you have any questions?
Question, what you asked Professor Ra, if I understand correctly. I was just wondering about some of the mail that we've been getting, or at least I've gotten, and I appreciate this forum that you're having, Professor Ra. It was very interesting and very important. Nisa May, for not being on camera this evening. I'm not camera ready, so. But some of the mail that I've been getting is very the opponent of Attorney Gascon is really seems to be trying to influence, you know, black people. And I don't know what it has anything to do with it, but the last piece of mail I got, it shows a young brother, you know, he took a class and he got a job coding, after school program, and he got a job coding. And so now this Hockman in the flyer mailer is saying that, you know, he's going to work with organizations and, you know, that offer job training after school and everything like that. So I was just wondering how, I'm not influenced by it, but I could see how other people could be influenced by it. And I was just remarking that the people who are supporting Hockman, I'm looking at this as one of them, as he said, as said, is Caruso. And we know that that's not good. You know, he is not good. He doesn't have any interest in doing anything for black people. So I'm just, you know, how would we go about combating that kind of misinformation or distractions, or, you know, effort to influence us in that way? It seems kind of
one-sided
and kind of I would say mean-spirited, you know, to try to use those, our aspirations, you know, against us in that way.
Dr. Rob, may I try to address the issue? I'm not going to say I'm going to have an answer, but I would like to comment. And then, in all transparency, I am a member of St. Timothy's, and I'm also a deputy district attorney. But I asked you guys to check out Mr. Hockman's prior path. Last year, he changed his political affiliation from independent to, from strike that, from Republican to independent. Okay, so at what point did he ever engage in any activity to uplift the kids in our communities? I would say let's look for evidence that what he says now is part of his spirit. I'm not going to be mean-spirited because I don't want to be that, but look for the evidence. He was a Republican up until a minute ago. And now, you know, we have Mr. Gascon, who has taken on a immense project of trying to even the playing field, for lack of a better word. And of course, he's getting a lot of pushback. And I also have the question, where are the supporters who were with him 4 years ago? They must have known that this was not a four-year endeavor. He was trying to change hearts and minds and cultures and practices. Certainly those previous supporters had to understand that it wasn't going to be a one-time shot. They needed to stand with him all the way to pass a first term. So that's a question on the table. But I asked you, ma'am, to check out his history. Has he ever engaged in any activity consistent with what he's suggesting he will at this point?
Mm.
Look for the evidence.
Yeah, Lisa, thanks for that comment. Sanifa, you want to respond?
I appreciate what you asked, Professor Ra, if I understand correctly. I didn't get the person's name that.
Lisa Davis.
Lisa Davis. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Lisa. Thank you for that. And I haven't. Actually, you're right. I really don't know anything very much about that person, except from what I've seen in the ads on TV and the mailers that I've been getting. And so I'm just saying that I didn't know anything about him. And so Sanjay was letting us know about his political affiliation at this point, but I did not think that any of what he was in this mailer was believable. Because, some of the people that's responsible for the mailer, I know that they're not
right.
for us.
Yeah. You can judge a person by the company they keep.
Yes, I mean, exactly.
Those folks have a lot of money and they can print up a lot of pretty flyers and say a lot of things. It's up to us to check the evidence. I mean, where's the history of his being a community, a lover of the community that he now says he wants to serve.
And that was Stephanie Meyer.
Yes, yes.
Not Lisa Davis, Stephanie Meyer. And Stephanie, would you leave your information as a deputy district attorney?
Absolutely.
So,
yes.
A lot of things is people don't understand. America is the crime capital of the world. There are more crimes in this country than any country its size or its progress, its budget. America is just crime ridden. And people watch it for entertainment. All they do is watch crime. So they develop a psychology that crime is all around them. It's in their house because they cut the TV on, or they got big screens so they can see it better. And at the same time, the news cover crime, they repeat it and repeat it and repeat it like it's happening 10 times. You think it's 10 crimes, it's the same crime. Because every news station you turn to, talk about it. So it got people thinking that crime is all around them, when crime has always been here. You know, like it's new crimes. And you have to understand that people have been murdering people in LA for years. People have been stealing for years. People have been robbing for years. People have been dealing for dope, even though there's laws against it. People figure out how to get around it. And even some of the DAs were mixed up with the death row records. Some of the DAs were mixed up in covering up for murderers and robbers. I'm not saying it's hopeless, but you have to get involved and educate yourself. That's what Sanifa is pushing, and we push at the organization. Us, education, mobilization, organization, and then confrontation. But if you don't know what's going on, except for through the media, you'd be one of those people that carry a gun to go to the bathroom. Because you're scared, so break in on. But go ahead, brother. Let me see, Lisa. Did you have a question? Well, we're gonna sign off. Roger Key, you want to tell them what's coming on tomorrow?
Yes. Let me share the screen.
I want to thank everybody for coming on. It was excellent, Mr. Maddox. Leave your information. We got to get you on the show to talk about county budget. All right. People don't know nothing about it. People don't know what they're spending money on. They don't know why they're paying all these property taxes. And you got all these homeless people. and they spend billions of dollars at war. So we'd like to have you on and get some of your perspective. Go ahead, Rashki.
Okay, we got a musical artist coming on tomorrow, Tamron, West Coast Queen of Southern Soul. So she will be on tomorrow. I'm going to show some of her information, her website, hear some of her songs and her perspective about what her music's about.
Mm-hmm. That's right. A good thing. Well, we want to thank Brother Saber Tolivo. Do you have a comment? You're on mute.
I just wanted to compliment and congratulate the show again tonight. It's an excellent program. And it was excellent exchange between the guests and the speaker and questions that came up, and excellent moderation from you, Professor Ra. Santi Sana for the strong work the Ascent is doing.
You know where I got my training from, Dr. Mahala and Karenga organization does, with the news forum every Friday at 6 p.m. It's a phone-in. And we'll put the number in the chat if you want to continue discussions from a community-based consciousness of doing justice and walking in the way of righteousness. Every Friday at 6 p.m. to about 7:15, we discuss critical issues and courageous thinking about African people and our community. And we have Soul Session on Sunday, 3 p.m. We just discuss Fannie Lou Hamer and all the great martyrs and people that contributed to our liberation and the liberation of humanities, because we're taught when Black people are free, everybody's free. And so that's a beautiful thing. We're struggling for freedom for ourselves, but we also, when we get free, they're going to get free. All right. So we want to thank you again for coming on. Hope that you will get those numbers out the chat for Soul Session, the email for information for to the African American Culture Center, Sanifu Adetona will be there to answer the phone call on during the week, and then on Fridays. It's just a phone number for Black World News Forum. And hopefully you'll come on. All right, Brother Rashiki, go ahead with your program.
Excuse me, Professor Ra.
You go.
Nisa Mehe Tafadali, this is Sabre Chimbuko Tembo again. And just as you're mentioning the African American Cultural Center, I want to invite everyone this Sunday. Sabre Dr. Malana Karenga will be lecturing on Haji Malcolm X and martyrdom and the martyrs that we have, people that give their life for the struggle. And so I want to, and also linking that to what's going on in Palestine. So I just wanted to invite everyone to join us this Sunday for Dr. Karenga's lecture on Haji Malcolm X, martyrdom, and Palestine. All Sante right. Sana, Professor Ra.
You must be kind, Sante Sana. Yeah, all right, Rashiki, go ahead.
All right, each one teach one in Conscious Corner.
And we on tomorrow night with what's the lady's name?
Tamron.
Tamron. And we have, if you got a topic or a discussion you want to discuss, contact us. And we can come on. This program will be on YouTube, our discussion tonight. And if you want to recommend people to look it up on the Community Education Network on YouTube, and they pull it up. Thank y'all again. We're going to take our pause, and we thank